This is Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow. Last time you went to the doctor's office, how interested was your physician in your lifestyle? Did your doc chat with you about topics not directly linked to your health, like maybe how you lost your job recently, or you've been stressed out taking care of your sick daughter, or you've been skipping breakfast lately? That is not just small talk. Your doctor, according to my next guest, should be listening carefully to what's going on in your life to pick up on the little clues that might help give her the best treatment that she can. How many doctors are actually listening to the details, and can they get better at it? A new study out this week in the Journal of the American Medical Association suggests that they can. So do we have to retrain all the doctors, or maybe just start with the med students? That's what we'll be talking about. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet us. Write the @ followed by SciFri, SCIFRI. Alan Schwartz is an associate professor and director of research in the Department of Medical Education. That's at the University of Illinois in Chicago. He joins us today. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Schwartz.
Thank you very much, Ira.
What was the problem that you were looking at in your study?
So my colleagues and I, in an earlier study that came out this year, had found that attending physicians, weren't always good at picking up on cues that patients were giving about important things in their life that really needed to be attended to in order to plan the right kind of care for these patients. So we set out to find out if we could improve physicians' abilities to do that.
And could you do that?
We could. So in the study that just came out, we took the medical students at the University of Illinois at Chicago and divided them into two groups and trained half of the medical students with a workshop designed to sensitize them to the importance of patient context and give them some skills at listening for it and incorporating it into planning treatment. And that group did much better than the usual performance of our medical students.
Can you translate to doctors, or do you have to just retrain medical students now? What about the old pros who are entrenched?
Well, this is a great question. And our study focused on medical students because we think that this problem is in large part a problem of training and that it's an important thing to deal with early on in medical training. But we have another study going on now that's working with residents, and I expect that at some point we'll have a study that's looking at practicing docs as well and improving their skills.
Dr. Schwartz, can you give us an example of the kinds of things that doctors should be listening for and don't?
Sure. I think you gave a great one at the top of the show. In one of our cases, we use actors playing patients, so they play the same role all the time consistently. And in one of our cases, the actor mentions that he's come in because his asthma is getting worse, and at some point in the visit he says, "And things have been tough since I lost my job." And what we'd like to see is that the physician doesn't just say, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that," and go on, but ask some questions about that. Because if the patient has lost their job and this means they can't afford their medication, they may not be using it properly, and simply prescribing a higher dosage is not going to help this patient.
Mm-hmm. So you would try to find a solution if they've lost their medication. They're not taking their medication.
That's right. So if the patient was supposed to be taking it daily and because they can no longer afford it, they're taking it every other day or every third day, then the doctor would try to find a cheaper medicine or some kind of a referral to a program that could provide that medicine.
Is it a problem of lack of time with the patient? We hear that doctors, because they have to bring so many patients through their offices these days to make the kind of money they'd like to make, that they just spend just a few minutes with their patients.
So this is a really great question, and the answer is somewhat, but not entirely. So we know that for two reasons. First, in our earlier study of practicing physicians, we sent actors to visit these physicians in their offices, so they didn't know they were seeing actors. They thought they were seeing patients, and in that study, we found that the amount of time they spent with patients affected whether they asked about these kinds of things, but didn't affect whether they incorporated what they learned into the final treatment plan. In this study with the medical students, because we were using standardized patients at our clinical performance center, the time for each encounter was controlled. So we know that whatever difference we see here between our usual students and our trained students, it's not due to giving them more time to explore this with the patient.
Now, it seems to me that it's one thing to pick up on these cues about the patient's life, but is the resulting care that much better when they do that?
So that's an excellent point. If the physician doesn't get these cues, then they almost certainly won't be able to plan appropriate treatment for the patient. But even if they ask about these cues, even if the physician probes them and finds out the key information, they still may not incorporate that into their treatment plan. And our study suggests that's a harder thing for physicians to do when the information is information that's unique to the patient about their context than when it's information that's really about the medical situation of their disease.
I have a question here from someone who tweet says, the longer the doctor listens to you, the more likely they will diagnose the illness correctly. They should listen for 2 minutes before talking. Is that true? Should the doctor just sit there and listen without interrupting? Or what technique is involved that you suggest?
Well, we train our doctors to listen for these cues and then to explore them with the patient. So I think that the point is very well made, that physicians do need to do a lot of listening, and they're trained, I think, quite well in general to do that kind of listening. But they also then need to check back with the patient. The real skill here is not hearing everything the patient says. It's hearing everything the patient says, determining what might be relevant for their care, and checking back on that.
Mm-hmm. Doctors are, I know of at least one case where doctors are now listening to patients while they're taking instant messages on their BlackBerries at the same time as their patients are in their office. They're answering other questions on their instant messaging. That doesn't sound like a good recipe to me.
No, I would fire my doctor if you were doing that.
Unless it's the head of the practice. Okay, well, this is interesting. So you say you're following up with another study of physician training?
Yes, my colleague Saul Wiener and myself and my other colleague Eileen Harris, who were involved in the study that just came out, have a study ongoing where we're looking at resident physicians. So they've left medical school, but they're still supervised in their practice, and applying our training to them and seeing if we can improve their ability to do this not only with these actors, but also with their actual patients.
Interesting. And as far as that point you made about firing your doctor, is that something you as a patient should be watching for when you talk to your doctor, that he or she is following up and listening to you?
I think that's an important skill and one that we should expect from physicians. Now, I'm not saying that on any one visit, you know, if your physician is distracted, you ought to go and look for another doctor. But I think that a pattern of disregard for things that the patient feels are important in their life is certainly a red flag.
All right, Dr. Schwartz, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Absolutely.
Alan Schwartz is Associate Professor and Director of Research in the Department of Medical Education at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Up next, when you walk into a room, do you notice everything in it? Do you pay attention to the stapler sitting on the desk in the corner or the color the carpet is? What about when you're driving? How aware are you about the traffic, the pedestrians around you, the road rage that you might be getting into? Do we pay so much attention to one thing that we completely miss something else going on right in front of us? Do we think we're great at multitasking when we're really not? My guests have written about these things in their book, The Invisible Gorilla. And if you hadn't already, I want you to go over to our website and check out the video that's up there. You can do it later if you like when you get home from driving. But I want you to do it in the car now. You can take the test for your attention yourself. There's a very famous little test and a follow-up test there that I'd like you to take right on our website at sciencefriday.com. You can tweet us at SciFry or phone us 1-800-989-8255. Let me introduce my guest. Christopher Chabris is Assistant Professor of Psychology at Union College in Schenectady, New York. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Chabris.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Daniel Simons, is Professor of Psychology at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in Urbana, Illinois. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Simons.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk about the invisible gorilla. Now, I don't think I gave away what the test is all about, but it is a famous test, and we've seen it around the internet. It's where it tests your attention span and what you actually miss that's going on in front of you.
Sure. So this is a study that we did about 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's based on some earlier work by our colleague Ulrich Neisser, but it extends it in an important way. The task is very simple. All you have to do is watch a video of people passing a basketball and count how many times the players wearing white pass the ball.
Right.
And as you're doing this, in the middle of the video, we have a person wearing a full-body gorilla suit walk into the scene, turn and face the camera, thump its chest at the camera, and then walk off the other side a total of 9 seconds later. Mm-hmm. And what we find is that half the people we show this to just don't notice the gorilla. And if you ask them about it, they say, "I missed what?" You show it to them again, they'll sometimes accuse us of switching the tape.
and then there's a follow-up to it that you did also, right?
So I won't give away that one. That one will still work on you after what I just talked about.
Right. You'll get to see whether you see the gorilla again. So how is it that we pay attention? What does it mean? Why are we distracted? I think a magician might call this something else, you know, sleight of hand, misdirection. He wants you to look at one thing and you'll look at something else. What does this show us, that we're not good at taking in everything in the whole scene?
Well, it shows us a couple of things. One is that we actually are very good at paying attention to things, and the fact that we can follow a ball flying around a video at high speed and actually count the number of times people touch it is a remarkable cognitive ability that our brains are capable of. But on the other hand, when we're devoting our attention to that task, the experiment shows that we can completely miss extremely salient things that happen right in front of us. And incidentally, other research by other laboratories found that some people who missed the gorilla in that original video actually had their eyes looking right at it for up to a full second and still did not see it. So looking and seeing are not the same thing. And attention is a great thing, but it doesn't necessarily spread over the entire visual field or everything you want to do.
All right, we're going to take a short break while you go watch the gorilla video on our website at sciencefriday.com. We're going to take a break and come back and talk lots more with Christopher Chabris and Daniel Simons, authors of The Invisible Gorilla and Other Ways Our Intuitions Deceive Us. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Don't go away. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR.